greetings and salutations to you all. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Going strong for over 46 years now. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all sit in front of our radios and chat with each other, or teach each other, or learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, one of my many email addresses available is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul, WS2N, and relate some space or NASA-related story and see what he has to say, you can contact him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Now, for the rest of the links, let me remind you that Verizon works in mysterious ways, and sometimes if you type in the link, it might not go completely through. If that's the case, go up to the top of your web browser, look at the URL, and look to see if it begins with HTTPS. If it begins with HTTPS, you have to remove the S. By doing that, you'll get directly to my link. I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but until I figure a better workaround, just remember to check for the HTTPS at the beginning of the URL. With that in mind, I offer a link page of interesting articles and or YouTubes that I've seen throughout the week. I cut and paste them to a link page, and I keep them available. I publish them on the weekend, and they'll stay there for the foreseeable future. So the way to get there is to type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We also offer an audio stream of the Technical Net on the Internet. If you would like to get it, just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. It was originally meant for the Technical Net, but I've kept it live the rest of the week because some people asked me to. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike and KC2NJI is a great archive site called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of these Technical Nets that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who moved away from the area or unfortunately become silent keys over the years. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second and I will return once again and tell you what we got planned for you tonight. Okay, we got a standard operating technical net. We don't have any guests, but I will give you a couple of short little stories on what's happening in the world of artificial intelligence, because it's been making the news for years now, for good or for bad, and so we really should know what's going on there. So we'll give you a couple of short stories and give you an opportunity to respond as you wish. You know, there'll be another chance to bring up the subject of AI later in the net. Then we'll have the main segment of the Technical Net, questions, comments, and topics, amateur radio related, science and technology, what have you. I'll ask people to hit their push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related topic or science and technology. I would prefer our amateur radio up front, but you know, whatever you want to give me. If you have any long-term presentations, keep that to the end. Otherwise, you know, the first person to check in gets to be the first person on the list. That should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet Report. SpaceNet Report should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the game plan. Hopefully nothing will go wrong with the repeater or with my shack, and I won't get thrown off of All Star too many times. So if you find that I'm missing, just give me a minute or two to reconnect before you start jamming the repeater with Where's Roy. So plan. Let me drop and I'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about AI for today. Okay. Both OpenAI and Anthropic disclosed that their advanced frontier models, including Anthropic's Claude systems, managed to bypass security boundaries during evaluation and access or attack external computer networks and organizations. That's really made it into the news. We talked a little bit about it last Sunday. I'm a little dubious of whether this was accidental or just another PR stunt, because for some odd reason, these guys think that they're promoting their product by scaring us senseless. So it's continued in the news throughout this week. It hasn't come to any kind of a conclusion yet. Another thing in the news was Google swiftly rolled back a newly launched AI satellite image editing feature after users and researchers demonstrated how easily it could generate deepfakes and misinformation. So once again, can't rely on this technology, unfortunately. And last and not least, Anthropic recently highlighted its rollout of Claude Opus 5. So time marches on and models are brought out. Again, not quite sure exactly what its major feature set is, but, you know, obviously the company involved is very proud of it. We'll see what happens. Anyway, that's my little short story about AI for this particular weekend. If anyone has any comments, questions, or topics of AI that they'd like to bring up, now's the time.
Roy, this is Kilowatt 2, November Echo. I have a comment about AI.
Sure, Sam.
Well, the New York Times has been printing a lot about the AI models that have hacked three systems so far, and that they're failing to listen to the commands of the people who are telling them what to do. It seems that the AI is starting to operate on its own path to accomplish things, to be good. So therefore, it's now acting on its own to be good. So it's very, they have a word for it called, I'll spell it for you, it's a new word. It's S-C-H-E-M-I-N-G. Have you heard that word yet? S-C-H-E-M-I-N-G. Back to you, Roy.
Scheming?
Yes.
It's not really a new word, but okay. As I mentioned before, I'm a little bit confused. I'm not quite sure what's real and what's BS. These guys who run these AI companies have been known to do a lot of silly things for the sake of public PR advertising or impressing people with the skill. Right now, they're not apparently worried if they frighten all of us, but they want to have us perceive these AIs as incredibly powerful. That seems to be the key thing. So I'm not quite sure how much of this is real and how much of this is all propaganda. And unfortunately, it's not like the New York Times has any expertise in this. They go along with the crowd. Whatever PR is flown out there, they swallow it whole. And, you know, maybe 3 years from now, they'll have an expose about all this. But until then, you know, they'll take it for real.
Okay, I'll accept your cynicism for the time being, but it's kind of weird that the Times would promote it with such authority as stating that the machines are acting on their own at this point.
The Times tends to always use its authority. I've never known it to be dubious about anything. It's absolutely positively sure of whatever nonsense it's been fed. I mean, eventually they dig the truth out of the nonsense. But usually, if you go through the history of the New York Times, especially what they published before World War II, They were swallowing a lot of propaganda. They were kind of doing moral equality, and you know, this both sides are legitimate type of nonsense. So I'm not surprised at this type of behavior. It's historically what the Times does. You know, it has a lot of prestige. It has gotten a lot of things right, but unfortunately, if you backtrack, you know, before it got it right, it tended to get it wrong.
Okay, I'm ready to see where you are. I have some to the regular portion of the net tonight, so I'll stand by, but you can put me down.
Okay, very good. I'll put you down. Anyone else have any comments related to AI before we move to the main segment?
And to extreme.
Yes, Wes?
Yeah, I said that to everybody because it is related to AI, but not necessarily to what you were talking about. State Farm is integrated AI tools into its operations, requiring agents to adapt to new technology while restructuring, I believe it's the right word, compensation and benefits. And that's it. I'm to enhance efficiency and customer service, but has led to significant changes for each independent contractor agent. We're talking about a few major lawyer firms who are trying to make it loud for whatever reason. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, they're behind the curve. A lot of major companies made a lot of very optimistic announcements a year or two ago even, and throughout the couple of years ensuing, taking them mostly back. It's been grossly disappointing. A lot of guys running companies have discovered that AI is relatively expensive, especially when they started when they stopped subsidizing their fee schedule, and you had to pay per token and such. It gets expensive, and productivity ultimately doesn't seem to work out. There's a few cases where it seems to be worth the money to one degree or another, and that's in programming and such, coding. But most of the other stuff, it has failed miserably. Personnel, human relations, all manner of things. So there's a lot of disappointment out there, and people are starting to rehire the people that they fired, even though the reality is a lot of people who were fired and blamed on AI replacement didn't have anything to do with AI replacement, simply that during COVID they overhired far too many employees. And they didn't need them, and they needed the money to pay for the capital investment in artificial intelligence. So that's kind of why that disaster was happening. So already you're starting to see the bubble start to burst. There's the wonderful story of this 24-year-old genius who used to work for OpenAI, who became an investment guy and had a fund for $48 billion. Imagine that, 24-year-old guy who was able to talk people into giving him $48 billion to invest in AI, and he basically went bankrupt and had to sell his stake in whatever was remaining. So, I don't know. I don't think, I think the bad news is just beginning. And, you know, companies that are announcing that they're shifting into AI for added productivity are going to find out their mistakes soon. But we'll see what happens. Anything else?
The only addition is that when you talk about companies that make tens of billions of dollars, the information that I was able to read was they made twice as much of income as last year. So we understand that we do not have end of the year, we have a mid of the year, but he already made twice of that money. Then we're talking about what? Three times of that money, just because of the simple switch, AI switch, switching to AI. I mean, I'm not sure how much that information, how much that information is credible, but it's kind of scary and puzzling at the same time. Back to you.
Okay, it pretty much goes against everything I've been reading in the last few months. The only companies making that much kind of money is the AI companies themselves. And if you look at their money going in and money going out, they're basically circular investing. NVIDIA gives money to OpenAI. OpenAI gives money to a company that makes these data facilities that then gives the money back to NVIDIA. So it's like about four or five guys sitting around a card table passing the same $50 around and around and around and saying that they all made, $1,000 just sitting at the table. So I tend to doubt it. I haven't heard of any non-AI related company somehow showing that they've manifested $20 billion more dollars in profit. If that happened, then it would spread like wildfire. The guys trying to run this scam would promote it to the high heavens, and I haven't heard it. So I would take it with a grain of salt, Brett.
Thank you very much for your opinion, Roy. Well, 20 minutes before the technet, my wife showed me that information, so we do not know whether the major law firm is trying to fantasize or they really base on credible data. But that was true. So let's say $12 billion, right? And that would be twice, and we have a half of a year. That would be twice what they made last year. And then we took it three times. 200%. Just because of AI. So that would be that much money, their employees or independent contractors, or agents do not receive. So. Time will show. Back to you.
Yeah, well, it's not only that they wouldn't have received, even if they made a higher profit level, it's not like management and stockholders share it with employees. I mean, that was the kind of farce that was going on with the trickle-down economics, that if corporations had less taxes to pay, they would take some of the money that they saved from not paying taxes and give it to their employees and in bonuses and salary boosts. That never happened.
Okay, well, time will show. We do not have any credible evidence that we can stand on. The only difference between us is that my statement sounds quite optimistic, or not really optimistic, because it depends from what angle you're looking at it, but quite different, and your is more from the opposite side. So we'll see. Enter again, thank you.
Okay. Have you taken a look this past week at the Korean stock market? It's not an optimistic place these days.
No, I didn't. Would you mind to say a few words about it?
Yeah, they crashed. They lost a significant amount of money. There's over something like 2.1 million Koreans who play the stock market in South Korea, and they lost a lot of money. A lot of the stocks in that country tend to be technical ones, the memory manufacturers that have been making insane profits and such until recently. So there was a major crash in South Korea over this past week. It's been a mess there.
Yeah, it's really troubling to hear that. Korea became one of the tigers that was to be leading the world from the Asian side. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the financial strength has been for years. You know, the question that people keep asking, you know, the economic indicators are problematic, and yet the stock market just keeps on going up and up. And the reason why, among other things, is because there's a couple of technical companies. The S&P 500should be called the S&P 7 because, you know, NVIDIA and Microsoft and Google and Amazon and a couple others are basically pumping up the profits of the entire S&P 500. So the same goes with Korea. They have the same type of economy that's very, very active in the technical sector. So we just kind of hope that it isn't a portent of things to come with our stock market, because again, it's very similar. There's not much difference about the type of businesses that are in both sectors. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening. I mean, I wouldn't mind to see Korea shrunk, and as well as Japan, that is historically strong, just to contradict the Chinese expansion that everybody's opinion that may differ from mine. Do you mind to put me on list after everybody? I have only two subjects. They sent you the email. Thank you.
Yeah, Wes, I already put you on the list. Don't worry. Anyone else want to make any comments about AI before we move on to the main segment? Very well. On to the main segment. Anyone who has any questions or topics or comments, amateur radio related, hopefully, but if not, science and technology. I already have Sam on the list, and I have Wesley on the list. If anyone else wants to go on the list, hit that push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and if it's science and technology or amateur radio related.
KD2VHD, Jim, amateur radio.
Togi Doc. Anyone else out there want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, first up is Sam. What do you got for us tonight?
Thank you, Roy. This is K2NE. Roy, as you know, I've been a member of working with the CW Academy to learn the code, and one of the things I like about the course is that it's Zoom, and we have like six people in Zoom doing CW twice a week to, according to their instructions and the learning curve, the learning booklets and all this. And one of the guys I became very friendly with is in Texas. And we were talking about his situation with antennas. I don't know, I guess I should let it drop for a second. Anyway, he's in Texas and it's very flat and level, except a half a mile from his house is some hills, and the hills are 110 feet high. So he has the 360, which is basically flat, he has these hills 110 feet, half a mile from his house. And we're talking about how he should align his antennas to deal with getting over that the hills that are blocking part of his pathway. So did I explain the situation to you well enough that you can respond? This is K2NE standing by.
Yeah. Let's begin with the most simple response I can think of. Is he interested in the possibility of putting up a tower? Because, to a degree, that might alleviate a lot of his elevation limitations.
The most he can go up is 70 feet. He mentioned that to me. And then he was told that at the end of 70 feet, he should tilt his antenna a little bit upward to get over it. I don't know if that's a smart idea or not a smart idea. Back to you.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's going to have a negative effect on the opposite side of the terrain. You know, if you tilt it up, you'll raise the takeoff angle, you'll clear the hill. But on the other side, instead of going up to the horizon, you may crash into local ground. So again, it sort of depends upon what location is disrupted by just keeping it level. You might want to consider antenna designs that have a slightly better takeoff angle. So they'll, instead of going off at the horizon, they kind of tilt upwards across the way. A 5/8 wave is a famous decent antenna that has a good higher than standard takeoff angle.
Maybe you can explain something to me. When you use an antenna, is it going straight out to a horizon and then picks up the skip? How does the skip work from an antenna, location?
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. What happens is you kind of want your RF to propagate upward towards the horizon. You want it to go up into the ionosphere. In the ionosphere, you get refraction. Same way as a prism will bend light, a ionosphere, a charged dielectric will cause the pathway to get distorted and will kind of twist it back down towards the ground farther away. If you're lucky, it'll hit the ground and reflect back up into the ionosphere and do a second refraction. And so you'll get skip across a significant portion of the hemisphere. If you have ground waves, they're not going to get to the ionosphere. So you want something that has a takeoff angle at least at 90 degrees if most of your topology is relatively flat. If you have a bunch of things in the way, that's when antennas that have slightly elevated takeoff angles. So instead of having RF mostly go at a 90-degree angle from the ground, it's 100 degrees from the ground. So that's why I was suggesting the possibility of a 5/8 wave vertical, which is gives you that slight increase in the takeoff angle, just if you have local obstructions in your path.
Thank you. I'll pass the word. Thank you very much, Roy. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, as always, for your participation, Sam. Jim, what do you got for us tonight?
Thank you, Roy. This is KD2BHD. I want to revisit something I believe I mentioned before, but I wanted to see if I could clarify it a little bit. I'm going to propose an antenna. I'm looking for some feedback, whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, been done and it stinks, or it's something that's worthwhile pursuing. It's a variation on a flower pot antenna that seems to be the name that it's called commonly, which is made out of coax with a quarter wave stripped for the sort of the center conductor is the radiating element, and then usually an ugly bound another quarter wave back to allow the shell of the coax to serve as the other leg of the dipole from the point where the coax is stripped to the point where the ugly bone is, and beyond that is the feed line. You with me so far?
Yeah, we've talked about this a few times.
Yes. Did I mention the idea of a variable version of that?
I don't think so. That makes it much more complicated, though.
Well, that's the question. I have an idea how to do it mechanically.
Okay.
So if one were to strip the coax to just a nub of the center conductor and attach a length of small diameter stranded wire and wrap it into a chalk line, a small reel, uninsulated, so that if it was extended out let's say 5 meters, well, it was extended out to a quarter wavelength, and then there was a stack of toroid beads, ferrite beads, let's say wrapped in a piece of heat shrink, maybe a foot of ferrite beads, that could be slid back a quarter wave along the coax, taped to place, and a quarter wave of the wire extended out. You would have an antenna that resembles the flower pot antenna, but you could use it vertically, horizontally, as a sloper. And while its tuning would probably be a little erratic, it would be very easy to adjust by sliding the group of cores up down or extending the wiring around. What thinks you or others of that idea?
Well, I'll open it up to the crowd, and it'll be interesting to hear. Although it's doable, I don't think it's very convenient, because these things are kind of, you're going to have to mount them someplace, and then you're going to have to get to them, and you're going to have to adjust them from the bottom up and the top down. So, you know, it's doable. It makes sense electrically. But again, to me, you know, there's all kinds of different adjustable antennas, but this strikes me as one of the most inconvenient ones. You know, in some cases, there's the MFJ cheapo window pane antenna, which is basically a whip and a loaded coil. And for the most part, there isn't that much maneuvering of the whip. It's primarily tapping the loaded coil to change the tuning portion. So that's a little bit more convenient. You're only adjusting the bottom. Again, what you're doing is the bottom and the top. And you know, depending upon how long the antenna is, it doesn't strike me as a very simple, easy thing to do. Most variable antennas I'm aware of are a couple of levels of easiness better, but you know, it's doable as far as I can perceive.
I have another question.
Yeah?
There was a statement, horizontal or vertical, and vertical. Is it horizontal and vertical, or is it horizontal or vertical?
Or was my intent, depending on the physical layout.
And that's questionable. What do you think of the ring?
You can position it vertically or horizontally. I don't, again, see any particular problem. But again, to maintain it mechanically in a vertical position makes it even more difficult to maneuver the top of the antenna when you're retuning the whole thing. You know, the bottom will be relatively easy, but the top will be inconvenient, to say the least.
The configuration I was imagining was like with a lanyard rope over the top of a tree, where you could easily drop it down, reel up that chalk reel or similar fishing reel, whatever, to the length that you want it, and pull it back up again with the lanyard.
Okay, yeah, you can do that. But then again, you could also just set up different bands and hoist the one that you want to use and drop it down and just quickly hoist the alternative antenna that's sized to another band. So I think that's a lot easier to kind of go from say 20 to 40 than to start pulling apart the bits of the top of the antenna and then sliding the bottom. But, you know, again, both of them work. It's just I question the general convenience of the design.
I wonder if that has to do with, we both come from Brooklyn. I live in the sticks by comparison, and it seems easier to do it out here amongst the trees than amongst the buildings.
Not necessarily. I mean, you could do both types on the trees and or the buildings. It's just to me, you know, since the raw materials of the antenna design that you're thinking of is next to nothing. It's a length of coax cable the insulation is partially peeled off. It just seems that, you know, you roll up one of these antennas and, you know, you have, a 20 and a 40, and instead of doubling the length of the peeled portion or extended whip or something, you just kind of roll up the 20 and roll out the 40, and that probably takes significantly less time and has less chances of mechanical destruction over repeated adjustment of the resonant frequency. I think that's what I'm having a problem. Kind of thinking, you know, a single adjustable piece of coax versus a series of coaxes, you know, one cut to 10 meters, one cut to 20 meters, one cut to 40, whatever. Just attaching one end and pulling it up probably takes a lot less time than playing around with the top portion of the stripped coax cable.
So we're talking mechanically, and we have different approaches to that question. But my question was more electrically. I'm pretty comfortable for my purposes with the mechanical assembly of this thing. But electrically, is it a sound idea or is it quackery?
No, it's a sound idea. As long as it's mechanically intact and steady, then it should work because it basically uses the same principles. It's just that some designs have more mechanical wear and tear than others.
For sure, for sure. Any other opinions on the matter?
Anyone out there with opinions, feel free.
Well, thank you, Roy, for exploring that, and back to Ned.
Okie doke, thanks for bringing it to us, and I appreciate the participation as always, Jim. Wesley, what do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. We're thinking that when coaxial cable outer shield is removed, but the Teflon dielectric remains around the center wire, it functions as a dielectric growth of waveguide, guiding electromagnetic waves via its inner core, because we have two major components of the waveguide. That would be dielectric, which would be the Teflon, and the inner wire, which would be conductive medium. So this is rather supporting standard transparent electromagnetic TEM coaxial mode. What do you think about it?
I think it's overkill of the explanation. As long as you don't have the outer shield, you have a mono element. It's the same as using any other dielectric, be it Teflon or plastic insulated wire as your antenna. So all it acts as a radiating dipole. The trick is to use the lower portion of a quarter wave coaxial cable in its common mode type as the secondary dipole, and then choking the common mode operation with ferrite chokes after the coax cable length of a quarter wavelength. So, you know, you don't have to go esoteric and start to talk about waveguide. It's much simpler than that.
Why not? That's very cheap. When you look at the waveguide behavior and properties, the electric loading, the Teflon, that would be what, PTFE, its relative permittivity is a rate constant around to, I believe, 2.1, which shows the phase velocity, slows the phase velocity of the waves significantly compared to their core setup. And if we look at the mode propagation, then without the outer metallic return path, the standard TM mode cases and the structure instead of support hybrid or surface wave modes, that would be E11, E11 or similar cylindrical are the electric rod modes that we're going to have present. And then we look at the cutoff frequency. The structure will exhibit a frequency-dependent cutoff behavior governed by the diameter of the Teflon boat and its refractive index relative to the surrounding air. So then we can, of course, calculate the cutoff frequency and analyze the specific rod diameter and the frequency rate. I understand it's a overkill, but it's possible. It may take place. Back to you.
Point made.
Well, I differ in my opinion. It would screw things up, if anything. You get a waveguide to transfer energy from one point of the waveguide to the other end of the waveguide. That's not what the point of the structure is. The structure radiates electromagnetic waves into the air. You don't want to trap it to the very tip of the component. You could just as well remove the Teflon insulator dielectric from the portion of the coax and just have it be bare metal, and it would still work as a flower pot antenna.
I agree with that. I do.
Okay.
However, with 2 miles of pipe, regular pipe, we put the water in it, and it's going to be on a slope of 1 or 2 degrees. The all water that is put into the pipe goes outside of that pipe from the other side. And then if we look at the antenna that has 1 kilowatt power, and we are in line of sight, invisible horizon, and still with the radio, then we see that we don't have 1 kilowatt of power on our radio. We have probably a fraction of a watt on that radio, but we can still see the mast of an antenna of, let's say, AM radio station, whatever. What I'm trying to say is that it doesn't matter what it's made for. You have a pipe that cannot really work as an effective antenna. So if we deal with the wire that has still the electric on it, it's going to have the electric properties on it. Back to you.
We're trying to build a sprinkler system by analogy, not a hose. You're trying to build a hose. And again, I don't think there would be significant problems. People cover their radiating antennas with dielectric material all the time. Again, a lot of people use insulated wire to run dipoles or verticals or all kinds of things. So it'll shift the resonance ever so slightly, but not significantly to change the basic underlying characteristics of the radiating antenna.
Yeah, Dr. Lee, I value your opinion, but at the same time, we may say that we look in Wikipedia, we have a G-line, a GoBow G-line, which is nothing more, nothing less, but the coaxial cable that is that has the outer shield taken out and still has the dielectric on. So it was of no matter, of no importance, then the G-line wouldn't have a marriage to exist, right or wrong.
At approximately what percentage of amateur radio operators use G-lines regularly?
None.
Yeah, that says it all in my book. It's an esoteric example that doesn't really apply to real life by anyone. So, you know, if you want to talk theoretical, that's fine. But, you know, most people are kind of thinking in terms of practical. You know, what should I do? You know, I'm going to do this next weekend. What should I do? And, you know, you give them something that's esoteric out of Wikipedia that, you know, almost no one they know has ever even seen one. Have you seen a G-line? I know you store them in the literature, but have you physically seen a G-line?
I was working with it. I was doing experiments with it. It works.
Okay, you're a rare exclusion and you're doing experiments. Most people are kind of looking for practical solutions. So, again, I wouldn't really consider it, you know, what we're talking about is much less esoteric and much more simple and better understood by most people and used by many people. So I would stick with that, you know, unless you want to do research and development, that's a different thing entirely.
I absolutely agree with you, Dr. Boyd. Okay, going to the subject matter. Global device identifier, GDID, and cannot be disabled. And that's for the comment of yours, if you don't mind. So it has been referenced in court proceedings, notably in federal case involving alleged hacking activities. It was used by the FBI to track suspects across various locations and online activities, highlighting its role in digital investigations, end of quote. So the news is, version 10 and 11, probably nothing has a global device identifier, GDID. That's how its acronym is sounds, GDID, and cannot be switched off. So all of the computers, no matter what we do, they work as a beacon and cannot be switched off. The question is, I understand there is no privacy, but being aware of something that nobody tells about, is it legal? Dr. Ray.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't fundamentally tell you, but my guess is it's not illegal because there's no law one way or the other about it. So, if the law doesn't really address it, there's no such thing as it being illegal. There's a lot of identifiers on a lot of things. Most of them are well known. At this point, they're able to be spoofed. You kind of answered your question. Don't expect privacy. There are so many different places and things that are defeating our privacy issues. And there's, again, very little in the way of law. I saw a YouTube where they mentioned that the last law about privacy that was passed was back in the 80s, and it had to do with your video store not being allowed to tell other people what videotapes you rented. So talk about a technological, historical event. Our legislature isn't addressing the issue. So, there's not much that the general public can do. They can try to hide, but, you know, industry is always ahead of them.
We'll put it different way because I'm trying to understand what is right, what is not, what is true, what is not. So I'm going to read another quote. Global device identified GDID, the recently uncovered tracker in Windows is known as Global Device Identifier. The identifier is persistent device-level tracking mechanism that Microsoft uses to uniquely identify installations on the Windows operating system. And no matter if you use VPN or use whatever you use, you may use Tor, doesn't matter. It tracks you anytime, every time, all the time. And the question is, if spying is illegal, is that spying? Enter exit.
Again, since there's no law in the books that addresses it, I don't think it is. Now, keep in mind, I'm willing to bet you anything that the CIA and the NSA and all those fun guys know a way of turning it off. They wouldn't allow things like this unless they could turn it off. So I don't think it's published how to turn it off, but I think there are agencies that are capable of doing it because, you know, from the same people that brought you encryption with backdoor security holes, you know, they make sure that they're not locked out of anything. So I tend to doubt the complete information that you've provided, not because you meant to, but simply because the CIA and the NSA doesn't tend to tell people that they have back doors to things.
Okay, interesting. Any comment on this matter from the audience? Okay, there is no comment. So we know that spying is illegal. We know that placing listening devices without notice that you are being recorded is illegal. But at the same time, spying on everything that you do online, so. But it at least sounds that it's legal. Interesting. Maybe I don't understand it properly, so maybe I'm not able to understand the reality properly. The existence of GDID was brought to light during court hearings related to hacking cases. The FBI utilized the identifier to track a subject's activities across various locations and networks, demonstrating its activities in tracing users despite attempts to mask their identity through VPNs and other methods. End of quote. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
It's well known that a lot of people can track people through the use of their cell phone. It's relatively simple, and you don't even have to be a government agency with the legal forms. You could simply buy access to the cell tower and access their geolocation. So, you know, it's different to spy on people and listen in and track them. You know, the court sees that as two different things and addresses them differently. But, Jim, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, interesting topic. I have to point out spying is not illegal. Constitutionally, our government spying on us is not legal by the Constitution. I think it's the Fourth Amendment that was supposed to be securing a person's papers and effects. But that has been gone around for years because our government uses other governments to spy on us through the Five Eyes program and other things. But spying at its root is not legal in the normal sense of how you would use that phrase. It's a complex topic. At least it's complex as waveguides. So back to that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jim. It's very complex, and, you know, I mean, you can't really use blanket statements like people can't record what you said. Well, you know, there's probably someone out there listening into this transmission, and they can record that. Or if you, depending upon what state laws you have, there are state laws where both sides have to approve of having a conversation recorded, and others that just need one side to give their approval. So there's a lot of circumstances where your words can be recorded. You know, all the time you call for the tech help or some other such thing on the phone, and you'll hear this recorded thing that says your conversation might be recorded. So it's not kind of chiseled into stone that the state or anyone other than you can record your voice.
Yeah, here's a question. Because we have a privacy concern. The GDID function similarly works similarly to tracking beacon, which, we have a right to ask about the privacy and data security. And if you were to say that you left $1,000 for Joe Schmo or whoever at this place, you have a right to do it, and you have a right to keep your information private. But all of a sudden, it's not private any longer. Back to you.
Again, it depends what you determine to be privacy. If you mentioned on the phone that you did that, and someone tapped into your phone, that's a loss of privacy. If the person listening in on extension listened to you, that's not. And also, the whole idea of this device is it doesn't relay audio. It simply relays location, geolocation. So if you go to that location with an object that can be tracked, you're stuck. They know where you are. It happens every day. You know, a lot of detectives will get cell phone records, and it includes the GPS tracking information. They know exactly where your cell phone went, and chances are you were carrying the cell phone, so they know where you went. So it happens every day. Doesn't require a subpoena. No one gets arrested for doing it. It's a legitimate use of the technology at this point, and it's not covered by any law. So, unfortunately, even though you think it's a violation of your privacy, the court apparently doesn't.
Come on.
Sure, Jim.
I think it's certainly absolutely unconstitutional for a government agency to do that. The courts have not found that as yet. I think at some point they will. There's definitely a process for hundreds of year old laws to be applied to new emerging technologies, and lots of opinions on the topic. I can't prove it to you right now on this radio transmission that my opinion is right, but I hold it, and it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, and all that we say, especially legally, is subject to change and interpretation by future justices. But at this point in time, there's no law against it, and there's no finding from any higher court against it. And so the police department does it, the federal government does it, and even unfortunately, I forget the details, but an average Joe Schmo, if they want to invest in some ability to utilize local cell phones, can do it. It doesn't even require any kind of law, a federal, state, or city law connection. And that's the way it is for the time being. It's always subject to change, but we're talking about the present day.
The question that I had was that if you don't have a losses, let's say your location, your cell phone location is okay. Somebody knows it's okay. You don't have losses. But if somebody, I'm not saying government, somebody get in possession of the information that you left $1,000 for Wesley somewhere. And then you have a lawsuit. Is that illegal? Up to you.
Again, I don't think finding the information using tracking devices is illegal. Taking someone else's property, that doesn't belong to them is intrinsically illegal. But obtaining tracking information in our present legal